Another crash, another burn. Pixels scattered, code concerns. Head in hands, what do I do? Frustration rising anew. Do I need help? Yes, it's true. This broken link's a heavy chain, driving me insane.
Good, let's get going. We are talking about
support, not vendor support.
Yeah. I think our working support. Title was, do you need support?
Yes. Yes.
What are the flags?
Let's talk about support.
Oh man, we got...
Good time to talk about it because we were just talking about it earlier today. I think one of the big reasons why people, or at least in our experience, why people switch away from vendors is because of crappy support. So, you know, typically on the dev side. So I think like just starting off with defining, you know, what we think of as support. So traditionally there's like the development support. So bug fixes, technical fixes, small things that sometimes shouldn't be a support request, but often are. So like we've seen stuff as crazy as like, I just need to update content on my page and that's a support request. Let's bucket it as what we consider bad support.
I mean, there's so much more in bad support.
I'm just trying to summarize it into something really like simple at first, and then we can kind of like flesh it out a bit more.
It's like keeping the lights on support, where pretty much all your money is going to like purely maintenance and patches and bugs and things like that.
I think that's needed sometimes with certain technology and stuff like that. For like the weak. Frustrating support to me is like, hey, I need to do an update to my website. I need to update content, which you've seen. And it's like, you kind of put in a request, the turnaround's terrible, and then you get charged an hourly rate to do like copy edits to a website, which is just crazy that that's not designed or like the website wasn't designed or built with that in mind. And that happens way more often than people think. I mean, it surprises me. And, you know, we're constantly having these conversations. And then, you know, we've talked about like what is value-driven support. So website management for companies that it just costs them way too much to, like they shouldn't have employees internally that are intermediate to senior level employees managing a website or like uploading content and things like that. It's actually more cost-effective to just partner with a vendor and put them in charge of the website. And then the last one that we talked about that I think is pretty suited for a specific type of client, but optimization. So how do we consistently optimize the user experience and engagement on the site to achieve X, whatever the goal is? So the biggest frustration is with that first level of support, which we have traditionally never done. We will never do. We kind of like went through a really long period of trying to figure out, do we want to even start getting engaged with support contracts? Because what has been traditional in the space is just not very value driven in our mind. And we didn't really want to staff up a business full of people that were just in orders from clients that are frustrated. They can't do it on their own. So, a big part of our direction was like, we want to make sure that whatever we design and build is built for you for the future so that you can continue to run it on your own. And so that didn't require any support until we got to the point where we started to realize like you're in a scenario where you're understaffed, bandwidth is maxed out, you have in some cases senior manager or director doing website updates, and that salary cost is just way too high, so we can actually help support in that way. But the big red flags that always hear, I'm sure you always hear these too, is slow response times on really small updates. It's not just the response time itself, but it's the ratio of simplicity to response time. And I don't know what happens within these organizations that like maybe there's just too many, they scale up to a point where they're too busy and the priority of clients changes and they just get too busy or something. But like that's one of the biggest ones, is that we pay a lot of money annually and I can't do a really simple change without waiting far too long, basically.
Yeah. No, I think it's like there's a myth around this idea of a support retainer. And I don't know, it's I'll probably get a slap on the wrist for saying this, but I find some of their models completely predatory. Because they're
sure,
almost
yeah.
like they're getting billable hours for maintenance and fixes and ongoing support. So they're thriving off of issues, like problems. So if there's always something to fix, then there's always money to be made, which means there's no reason to take a long view of the product or the website. It would be really a bad business decision for them to say, well, we're going to fix everything and make you, you know, self-sufficient.
Yeah, totally. It's built like, in reliance.
Yeah, it's just like the economics of these traditional retainers. I feel like they're not in the favor of the client. They're in the favor of the agency. And they're mostly structured reactively. Like, they're that insurance policy, and I get it. Like, you have websites and you have products. And products, they're definitely a bigger beast. Like, you need someone paying attention to security, technology, updates, patches, stability, uptime and monitoring, and all of that stuff. And I don't want to say anything disparaging about that, because there is an absolute need there. But the good teams that we've worked with, they're on top of that. They're scheduling monthly check-ins. They've got like a whole system around it. But that's maybe one team that we've ever worked with. The rest that we've heard about or like, you know, brushed up against, they're in that classic, more predatory retainer model where you sign a retainer with them, they disappear, they only surface when you submit a ticket, and then that ticket requires how many meetings of billable hours to just find a solution. And before you know it, you've lost 3 to 4 weeks before you get a solution. And it turns out that, you know, you had to add a button in a section or something.
Yeah.
And they're big retainers. We've heard like 3 to 5K per month, like on the small end, upwards to 10 or 15K for just sitting there and waiting for something to break. And that money's not getting that back. The way the retainers are structured is you lose it, you use it or lose it, which is, it's crazy. So again, I do get it. It's partly an insurance policy, but still, even the insurance industry, I feel like they're dialed in to anticipate the likelihood of an event. Whereas with technology, I think even to clients, it still feels like this black box. And if it's a black box, it's really easy to be like, just pay us this and we'll make sure nothing happens. Well, what's the likelihood of XYZ happening? I think if you're in technology, you should be able to sit down and think about what that is, especially if you were the one that architected it. You should know better, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like a remnant of a really old model when websites were first coming onto the scene, and it would cost you, you know, $100,000 to build like a simple landing, like a brochureware marketing page. And people actually couldn't do any updates because they just didn't know how to do it. And so you had these like early stage web dev companies that were basically like locking clients in, you know, and being like, oh, this is going to cost you an insane amount of money because it's relatively new technology, but also you can't do anything on your own without us. And so you have to sign up for a retainer for us to do anything for the website. And that's just in perpetuity. And obviously the web has changed and all technology has changed and it's become way more democratized and allowing, you know, the goal is always to enable people to do their own thing, because then obviously the SaaS companies make way more money, more clients. But yeah, it's like an old model that's still super prevalent. And I mean, it's like we've literally had, I don't know, 2-3 conversations this week about with companies that are stuck in bad relationships that they kind of want to get out of and are costly. And it just it's never ends. It's like every year, it's constant complaints about this model.
That's why we keep pushing people to Webflow as well. Like, Webflow is a great model because they handle most of the brochureware at both the small, mid, and like enterprise level for a fee, but largely in the small, like the small enterprise area, clients are paying like $200 to $600 per year for that hosting and maintenance that's managed and maintained by a $1 billion company. So their uptime is incredible.
Yeah.
Their security is incredible. You're never picking up the phone to be like, my website's down or I need you to do this security patch. It's like they're on it. So that means, so the clients that are on Webflow for us, it means that when we sign a retainer with them, anything we're doing is delivering additional value.
Yeah. So right? we talked about this before. We even talked about it a little bit in the last podcast, but, and I think honestly, it takes the right company to think like this, because a lot of organizations still aren't thinking about their website in this way. But shifting that mindset from website to product, you know, when you launch the website, that's really day one. And if you have a team, workflows and process internally to be able to really maximize that investment, that's great. If you don't, you know, it might not do much for you, to be honest. And so like shifting from thinking about support as more of revenue enablement or marketing enablement instead of just support, like support is maybe not even the right word. It is and it isn't, I guess. But yeah, just thinking about that level of support as revenue enablement and marketing enablement. Totally. So helping to actually meet those goals. And there's a whole bunch of different flavors of that kind of support. There's what we talked about, which is maintenance and monitoring. So like optimization, are you really optimizing the user experience in order to achieve whatever target? If you're trying to generate revenue right through the website, optimization is obviously hugely important. Monitoring is hugely important. These days with accessibility and all the technology changes, monitoring is like even more important. Make sure that your website is constantly performing well.
Yeah, with
there's other
SEO types of
support
and AEO
too. Yeah, content. Content support, SEO support, AEO support, data and analytics, user experience enhancements. So that's another big one that would be important over the lifespan of a website.
Yeah. And you have like,
I also think
UX
that like
experts actually paying yeah. attention to the product if yeah. you treat it like a product. That's like yeah. pretty much what we're trying to shift the narrative to, right?
Yeah. So a good client vendor relationship, I think in our space, is also just like thinking when you're looking for that website, is thinking about judging the vendor that you're looking for as like a partner potential too. And how do we actually leverage their capabilities to kind of like superpower our whatever goals, our marketing efforts, our revenue goals, and just like
yeah,
working out a flexible plan. It doesn't have to be it shouldn't be cost prohibitive, but like obviously there needs to be a fair price for that kind of management, but it's like those support contracts can be pretty flexible. So just figuring out what's important, what's needed, what are the goals that you're trying to achieve. Yeah.
Like for us, the one thing we do with our retainers is we set up that kickoff meeting to talk about what the objectives are. We treat it almost like a project rather than just a dependency, which is a really big shift. And then we have quarterly check-ins where we talk about what's a priority? What can we do? The way we talk about our retainers is like those hours are there to be utilized. We want to utilize them for the right things. And we have to collaboratively do that with a client. It's not a sign the paperwork, disappear, call us when you need us kind of thing. We're trying to build this into more of a partnership model. I've got a short list of just some value-driven retainer points, like what I imagine it looks like. It's this idea of shifting the focus from maintenance to measurable improvement. That's that optimization, the conversion, UX, content performance, things that we can monitor and improve on through design, technology, and monitoring. Definitely spending the retainer hours on something like A/B testing and analytics to help clients if they're launching new initiatives means that we're still thinking of the website as a product, because we're implementing an A/B testing framework that allows them to prototype and test ideas and choose the best direction. That's a great value add for a retainer. And then knowledge transfer, this is actually a huge flag that we didn't even cover, but I've found that some firms they get so cagey about delivering knowledge transfer or documentation about everything, because it's like, that's the keys to people being self-sufficient, right? we were even on calls last week where we're like, did they give you any documentation? I think in that scenario, the vendor just didn't make anything, which is flag number one.
And that was, just for context sake, a website. More than a website. Much more than a website.
More than a website.
More of a digital transformation project.
Yeah, like the fact that the vendor didn't have documentation to even pass on, that's a huge red flag, because it's like, I have questions about what are they managing? Like, how are they managing themselves if they don't have documentation? How would you ever hand this off if something were to happen?
Yeah.
Knowledge transfer is one of those
big
flags.
There's no future proofing that's been done at all there. No redundancy or back. Like, that's like the equivalent of, backups and redundancy, right?
Yeah. Like, those are just a couple points of a value-driven retainer. But if you think about it, all those points don't say anything about spending time on maintenance. Like, it's not really valuable to have your dollars just going to plugging holes. There was one other flag that we've been exposed to I wanted to highlight. If the firm owns their own homebrewed CMS platform, that is probably like cover, duck and cover and run, or whatever you have to do to get away from this vendor. But it always blows my mind when I hear that, because it's like, all right, this person's now running product and a services business, and they're selling you the product and the services to maintain the product and the thing that they build for you. It's crazy. It's like a recipe for conflict of interest. But it's also like they're dividing their attention. I have a note here. I would refer to them as digital slumlords at that point, because they're just like holding you captive on their platform that you're paying a subscription fee for, and they're maintaining it, and you're paying service, like a service level agreement, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's complicated. I think like the biggest flag is just that focus. It's like, if you want to be a SaaS CMS product, then do that. But like, you're not ever going to design or build something better than Webflow, WordPress, all of these other companies out there that have billions of dollars behind them, hundreds of people supporting the same as Shopify, WooCommerce. Like, proprietary system is just not going to be competitive, just in the nature of the fact that it's not a focus. Unless that is their primary focus, then they're more incentivized. They're more of like a SaaS startup in that example.
Yeah.
But to be a provider and then also have like a product that doesn't have a product manager, because you're not a product company, like, that's just a huge flag.
Yeah, huge risk. We've seen it happen, and it is shocking, and it goes the way you would expect, right? Mm-hmm. Mountains of cash changing hands for monthly fees plus subscription. It's impossible to migrate off the platform because they've basically handcuffed you into their technology.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bad recipe.
Yeah.
And that's what I find so shocking about this entire conversation is, like, we're trying to do things a little bit different, deliver this value, and there's all this money changing hands, just like getting shoveled into the incinerator. So we've got all these horror stories, which is why I feel like we're really ready to move into the retainer model, like the tennis version of what that is.
Yeah, definitely. And we talked a little bit about, what that is and how we view that. I think,
so how do we want to wrap up this?
I feel like this is a much needed rant about the state of this specific type of service in our industry, but I think it was good to get it off our chest,
for sure. There are a couple points I want to add as well. Like, we should have started with, do you actually need one, right?
Yeah, good point.
So,
good point.
Our process, whenever we start off a project, we say we will discuss retainers at the end of the project, because by then we will know what level of support you need that will actually fit your business.
Totally. And you may not need anything.
Exactly. And we've launched so many successful projects, products, where they don't need anything. There are still Django projects floating out there in the ether from us that I know are still running, they're still secure, and we don't hear anything from them. because they were just built in a way that, you know, they didn't need that level of support. So you do have to do a cost benefit analysis. Like, what is the worst case scenario if I didn't have support? What's the best case scenario? And just do that cost benefit analysis. But you do need a team like ours at the end of a project to help you tailor that program and define exactly what you need.
Yeah, I agree. It's a bit of a minefield out there for prospects trying to find support. But I guess that's like in any industry, you're trying to find, like, the goal of sourcing a vendor is, in theory, you're trying to find a new partner that's going to help build success, and probably more difficult than we probably imagine being on the other side without having the same level of knowledge about the industry and what's going on to really find that vendor. But, you know, that's kind of part of what our job is, to just really prove that we have our clients' best interests at heart, and like we also are trying to find clients that value good partnerships. So that's a whole other discussion, but, you know, how do you actually find that and connect with that vendor that is a good fit for your organization, which maybe we'll tackle at another time.
Yeah.
That's probably a good way to end it.
Yeah, that's it. So awesome. All right.